Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 15th day of October 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stewart Peterson right here in Champaign County. Discuss the agricultural cash grain markets with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana. Look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner. Hear all about US EPA's press release today on Enlist Duo. That's the new herbicide that can be used on 2,4-D / glyphosate resistant soybeans and corn coming up in the future. It was approved, but there are some really important pieces to that approval. We'll talk about that. And we'll also hear the crop progress update from the statisticians in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, and Minnesota on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's take a look at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon. From the corn pit, $3.47.5, the final price for the December contract. It was down 9.5 cents for the day. March at 3.60.5, 9.5 lower in the May, down 9.5 at 3.69.5. July, 3.76¾, down 9.5 cents. And December of next year, down 9 cents at $3.92¾. The soybeans finished at $9.52.5 in the lead option November. The harvest month down 12¼ cents. January at 9.61, down 12¼. The March 12 cents lower at 9.69¾. May down 11¾, 9.78½. The settlement price July at 9.85½, down 11½. And next year's November down 12 cents at $9.69¼. Bean meal futures up $3.30 for the day. Bean oil down 89 cents. Live cattle futures $1.52½ lower in the October at 162.82½. December at 162.47½, $1.45 lower on the afternoon. Feeder cattle $1.22½ lower at 237.50 in the October. November at 234.15, down the $3 limit. And the lean hogs for the day settled the December contract at $91.92½, $3 lower. February at $89.20, and it finished down $3.00 as well. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org and order your tickets for our Farm Assets Conference there.
Support for agricultural information on WILL comes from Busey. With over 145 years of agribusiness experience, Busey offers solutions, resources, and expertise to support local landowners. Busey, your dream, our promise.
In the outside markets at this hour, crude oil trading in November at $81.62 a barrel. That's down 22 cents. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.46¼, 0.9 cents lower. Gasoline on the RBOB or wholesale price at $2.14¹ per gallon, down 3¾ cents. And natural gas on the day is currently trading. I don't have that trade at the moment, but the ethanol futures, if it happens to pop up, there it is, $1.63½. It's down 3¾ cents for the afternoon. Checking the Dow Jones Industrial Average, it currently is trading at 302 points lower, 15,953 to the trade. The gold of $1,240, up $6.25 or thereabouts, and the dollar index at 85.23. That's down 0.706. A quick look at that natural gas number again. It's currently trading at $3.80½. That's down 0.02 cents on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Showers are likely to be cloudy with a high of 56 degrees on a northwest wind at about 13 miles an hour. Chance of rainfall today set at 60%. Tonight, a 30% chance of showers, mainly before midnight, cloudy, a low of 48, and then tomorrow cloudy, gradually becoming mostly sunny and a high of 63. Thursday, partly cloudy and 49 degrees. Friday, sunny and 67. Friday night, clear and 44. Saturday, sunny and 57. Sunday, sunny and 58. Monday, partly sunny and 62. And Tuesday, sunny and 59 degrees. So it should be good weather forecast for the harvest season coming up. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Let's turn our attention directly to the marketplace on this 15th day of October. Talk about what happened in Chicago at the CME Group with Jackie Vank. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon to you, Todd.
I suspect you have been talking to clientele across the Midwest. Are there places, and I suppose these will be out west as opposed to in the eastern part of the Corn Belt, that are moving today, and are they soggy and happy, or are they just soggy and moving?
What was that word you asked? Happy? No, the majority are not very happy. It's because they've been slowed down and they realize, you know, that they just have such a huge crop to deal with. Especially, you know, the bean, the urgency is more in beans right at the moment than it is anything else to try and get it in out of the field. And, of course, that and you combo it with the market going a great deal higher and then today ending lower, none of that really makes anybody extremely happy when you come right down to it.
We hear a lot about hedge funds in the marketplace the last couple of days, fund movement and the push higher. Can you tell me more about that recent market action the last few days and what it really means and how you view it?
Well, I view it as money moving more than anything else. And then this afternoon they did announce that a large hedge fund is going to be closing and that at the end of the month and that they've been exiting a lot of their positions, which, you know, Todd, it really makes sense when you look at the board because when we think of a position, we think of it as, you know, either selling a contract to corn or buying a contract to beans or doing something like that. When you have a fund position, it can be made up of many, many different things. It can be short corn, long cattle, long the dollar, short wheat, long crude oil. And so it's a multitude of things. And when you start to see the market react in a way that doesn't make sense, in other words, one product is going down that normally would support a higher level and a different product, let's say in the feeder cattle, in the live cattle, and they're all going down, you realize that it has to be money movement. And so, you know, anytime you have something going on like that, it throws a monkey wrench into everything. To me, I looked at the rallies that we had this week and said, you know, these are great opportunities to sell and take advantage of it because they definitely are not a reflection of the real market, at least not at this point in time yet.
Hey, speaking of reflections of the markets, I want to come out of the futures in Chicago and move to New York, where the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 302 points today. Can you tell me a good reason why that might happen?
Well, you know, it actually was down 400 at one point in trading, depending upon where you're looking at. But I think that it's very much related to Ebola and the second, you know, the second nurse that's been infected now. It has the investors pretty doggone nervous and just plain afraid that this could become bigger than what we're being told. And so I think until things settle down there, we're going to see a lot of sloppy movement back and forth. You know, some confidence, then no confidence. And I think it's also related to a very soft inflation number that came out of China. You know, this follows up an extremely soft inflation number coming out of the Eurozone. So, you know, you take that, you couple it with the fact that the dollar is down today. And I think that is some hedge fund movement, too, that they were long the dollar. But you hedge that, you know, you put that together with the dollar rising, and you have to be very concerned about the world economies. And, you know, some of our numbers didn't come in so great today either. So I think it's just a negative attitude at the moment.
Let's see. What else should we go through? Crude oil. OPEC is pushing production higher. Does that surprise you?
They are. You know, and there's some speculation, and it can only be speculation because you can't find anybody who's going to say it out loud, but that they're possibly doing this to try and hurt the terrorist countries, basically, because so many of them derive immense amounts of income coming out of the crude situation. And so we'll see once, you know, it's after holding that, you know, $95 to $100 level for such a long time to actually see 80 on the board at one point in time is kind of interesting. But, you know, because crude, I think we talked about this last week, Todd, because crude is priced in U.S. dollars everywhere in the world, as the dollar goes higher, crude prices go higher, and the anticipation that there'll be less demand is certainly driving some of this, too.
And finally, and we just have just a bit of time left, turn your attention not to the soybean crop here in the United States, because you've taken that up, but the impact in South America and the beginning of their planting season. They've not had the best of starts.
No, they actually got off to a really great early start, you know, and now it's slowed down. Some areas are too wet, some areas are too dry, you know, and so when you look at Mato Grosso, which produces about 30% of all of Brazil's beans, and then Paraná, which produces 20, that's 50% of the beans, and they basically need some rain at the moment. They're about 68% planted on beans, 50 to 55% planted on full-season corn. They're only about 1% behind is all they are at the moment. But you look at Argentina, you know, Argentina's 1 to 2% planted. That's very normal for this time of year, 50% corn planted probably by the end of the month. But the bigger issue, you know, you talked about beans, is that 790 million bushels of beans that's sitting down there in Argentina. You know, they have a 35% export tax, and it's the largest generator for income for the country itself. And so, you know, the government's been making an awful lot of noise about trying to force these guys to sell it. So I just put a pencil to it this morning at 962 and a half for beans. That 35% represents 2.6 billion tax dollars. Now, they're talking about a couple different ways they think they can get the farmer to sell. Maybe they'll lower the tax a little bit, and maybe he'll sell that, or they would like to establish a government warehouse situation. Well, you don't build something on you know, on the river in 2 minutes or anything like that. So the bigger talk now is that they may come in and nationalize a company, which, you know, anybody who's doing business down there, I don't care if it's Cargill, ADM, or any of them, know that this is a possibility. They, you know, it's unlikely they probably do one of the big multinationals, but you never know. If they're desperate enough, they may. The saddest part about the whole thing is Argentina's trying to imply that all of their economic problems are because the farmer won't sell beans.
Hey, we thank you for taking the time with us and look forward to talking with you again next week.
Yep, thanks, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That's Jackie Vakes, of course. She's with Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County and joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. You can hear her again on our website at willag.org. The address there is willag.org. Just one news story for the day. This one comes from the United States Environmental Protection Agency, and I will read the EPA's press release verbatim for you. Washington, D.C., the EPA is registering the herbicide Enlist Duo with its first-time-ever restrictions to manage the problem of resistant weeds. The pesticide is for use in controlling weeds in corn and soybeans genetically engineered to tolerate 2,4-D and glyphosate. The agency's decision reflects a large body of science and an understanding of the risk of pesticides to human health and the environment. The herbicides 2,4-D and glyphosate are two of the most widely used herbicides in the world for controlling weeds. Dozens of other countries, including Canada, Mexico, Japan, and the 26 European Union members, have approved these pesticides for use in numerous crops and residential lawns. Last year, Canada approved the use of Enlist Duo for the same uses that EPA is authorizing. This, of course, according to the U.S. EPA press release. EPA scientists used highly conservative and protective assumptions to evaluate human health and ecological risks for the new uses of 2,4-D in Enlist Duo. The assessments confirm that these uses meet the safety standards for pesticide registration and, as approved, will be protective of the public, agricultural workers, and non-target species, including endangered species. The agency evaluated the risk to all age groups from infants to the elderly and took into account exposures through food, water, pesticide drift, and as a result of use around homes. The decision meets the rigorous Food Quality Protection Act standards of reasonable certainty of no harm to human health. The approved formulation contains the choline salt of 2,4-D, which is less prone to drift than the other forms of 2,4-D. The agency has also put in place restrictions to avoid pesticide drift, including a 30-foot infield no-spray buffer zone around the application area, no pesticide application when the wind speed is over 15 miles an hour, and only ground applications are permitted. The action provides an additional tool for the agricultural community to manage resistant weeds, again, this coming directly from the U.S. EPA press release, to ensure that weeds will not become resistant to 2,4-D and continue increased herbicide use. EPA is imposing a new, robust set of requirements on the registrant. These requirements include extensive surveying and reporting to EPA, grower education and remediation plans. The registration will expire in 6 years, allowing EPA to revisit the issue of resistance. In the future, the agency intends to apply this approach to weed resistance management for all existing and non-herbicides used on herbicide-tolerant crops. The assessment is the third time in recent years that EPA has evaluated the safety of 2,4-D, and the safety finding is consistent with past assessments that EPA has performed for 2,4-D. EPA comprehensively reviewed 2,4-D in 2005, and once more in 2012, and now again in 2014 in response to the current application. EPA is registering the pesticide in 6 states, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Ohio, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. The agency is accepting comments until November the 14th, 2014, that's 30 days, on whether to register Enlist Duo in 10 more states. These include Arkansas, Kansas, Louisiana, Minnesota, Missouri, Mississippi, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and North Dakota. The EPA's final regulatory decision document is available in the EPA docket at www.regulations.gov. There are several notes of significance here, and I think it's important for farmers and the public to understand how U.S. EPA, as a regulatory agency, is shifting the way it deals with genetically engineered crops and the pesticides used on them. I read EPA's press release verbatim for a reason. Let's go back through the important parts. One, Enlist Duo. Well, the seeds and the related herbicide have both now been approved. Two, the herbicide approval has a sunset clause 6 years out. More importantly, USDA expects it will apply this kind of clause to all new and existing herbicides used on herbicide-tolerant crops. There's a 30-foot no-spray buffer zone for Enlist Duo. Only ground applications are allowed. And the wind speed cannot be over 15 miles an hour. That's item 3 and item 4. EPA is requiring grower education to use the herbicide, the companies to survey resistance development, and to report findings to the government. Those are 4 very important items contained in the United States Environmental Protection Agency's press release on the final decision to register Enlist Duo. Let's change governmental agencies now and switch from the United States Environmental Protection Agency to USDA NAS, which yesterday afternoon released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 87% of the corn crop has matured across the nation. 89% is the rolling 5-year average. Corn harvested now stands at 24%. That's well behind the rolling 5-year average of 43%. The condition of the crop has not changed since the previous week. 91% of the soybeans are dropped their leaves around the nation. That compares to 91% on the rolling 5-year average. 40% of the crop is harvested, and it's behind the curve as well. Normally at this time, 53% of the soybean crop has been harvested. And like corn, there was no change in the national condition of the soybean crop. Now here are updates from Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, and Minnesota.
This is Katie Andel, agricultural statistician for the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office. Mostly dry weather allowed farmers to harvest 30% of Iowa soybean acreage during the 5.1 days suitable for field work. A hard freeze was recorded Saturday morning across much of northern Iowa. Rain fell nearly statewide on Wednesday night. Total rain for the week varied from none in far northeastern Iowa to 1.1 inches at Bagley. Average precipitation for the week was 0.16 inches, almost a half inch less than normal. This was the driest week for Iowa in 11 weeks. 90% of Iowa's corn acreage was mature, 4 days behind the 5-year average. Corn harvest reached 10%, 3 weeks behind the normal pace. Corn moisture remained high at 23%, contributing to the slower than normal progress. 76% of the corn crop was reported in good to excellent condition. With almost all of the soybean acreage dropping leaves, harvest advanced rapidly to 39% complete. just over 1 week behind normal. 74% of the soybean crop was in good to excellent condition. This is Katie Andel reporting from the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Temperatures were below normal last week, and rainfall was right on the average. The overall state average rainfall was 0.54 inches. But southern areas generally received close to 1 inch of rain. Northern areas were drier. Corn harvest increased to 35% complete. This compares to 54% for the 5-year average. The condition of the crop was rated as 4% very poor or poor, 13% fair, and 83% good or excellent. Soybean harvest reached 29% complete compared to 52% normally for October 12. 91% of acres are dropping leaves compared to 92% for the 5-year average. The condition of the crop is rated as 4% very poor or poor, 17% fair, and 79% good or excellent. Winter wheat planting has reached 15% complete compared to 41% normally at this time. 2% of wheat acres have emerged, and the sorghum crop is now 26% harvested compared to 45% normally. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office. Favorable weather conditions throughout the week allowed 6.1 days suitable for field work across Minnesota, and that helped farmers make strong soybean and sugar beet harvest progress for the week. This is only the fifth week this season where Minnesota farmers saw more than 6 days suitable for field work. Corn harvest continued to be delayed due to high moisture levels in the crop, with only 7% of the crop now harvested. That's 2.5 weeks behind average and the slowest progress since 2009. Moisture content of harvested corn up to this point was estimated at 26%. That's down 2 points from last week. 68% of the corn crop is in good to excellent condition, and 87% of the corn for silage has been harvested. That's 2 weeks behind average. Nearly 40% of Minnesota's soybean acres were harvested during the week. With 62% of the soybean crop harvested overall, progress is now only 4 days behind average. 66% of the soybean crop is in good to excellent condition. 97% of the sugar beet crop has been harvested, the most during an October week in over a decade. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
This is Jessica Klatt with the Great Lakes Regional Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service. With the Indiana Crop and Weather Report, corn and soybean harvest was hindered and in some regions halted by frequent rains, but the mild weather permitted farmers to re-enter fields towards the end of the week. The lowest recorded temperature for the week was 29 degrees, the highest 79 degrees. Recorded precipitation ranged from 0.02 to 2.73 inches, with a statewide average of 0.86 inches. Mature corn was at 91% this week, compared to the 87% 5-year average. Corn harvested for grain was 25% complete versus 42% 5-year average. Soybeans dropping leaves progressed to 94% this week, on par with the 5-year average. Soybeans are 26% harvested versus a 47% 5-year average. Winter wheat is 28% planted compared to 37% 5-year average. 12% of wheat has emerged, ahead of the 5-year average by 3%. Winter wheat continues to be planted when farmers can gain access to the fields. Many farmers focused on completing corn harvest with the limited windows for field work. There are some concerns over corn stalk strength and green stem in soybeans from the damp fields. In the meantime, other activities for the week included hauling and drying down grain. That concludes this week's Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending October 12, 2014. This is Jessica Klatt reporting.
Our thanks to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of the crop progress across the nation. Back in just 2 minutes.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Let's check now what's been happening with the cash grain market. And Tara DeNice is with us to take that up. She's at the Climbers facility located near Logansport, Indiana, that belongs to the Andersons. Good afternoon to you, Tara. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm doing well. How are you?
No, I'm very, very well. I take it probably you may have trucks coming in there today, but I'm not certain. Tell me about conditions.
We do have trucks coming in, and we've stayed fairly steady as far as truck traffic to start this week, although conditions have been extremely wet, so not a lot of harvest activity going on in our immediate area. As you get a little north of here on some sandier soils and where a little bit of lighter precipitation reached some areas, they've been able to get going as we get some sun and clear weather, but overall, not a lot of a harvest activity over here.
Mostly corn coming in?
Yeah, absolutely. Nobody is able to run any beans at all, and it doesn't look like we have the potential to even think about cutting beans until probably early to mid next week.
Processors screaming?
Processors are starting to creep up slowly. Nobody's quite screaming yet, but we're kind of getting into that pattern, it seems like, of getting a little more panicked and starting to see basis values creep up a little bit.
And what do they look like in terms of cash prices?
As of tonight, the closing cash price on corn at Climbers was $3.21, corn at Delphi is $3.18, and beans at Delphi are $9.18.
And your expectation is that that cash price for beans will jump up later in the week?
I think certainly with the basis value, we could see that start to creep up. As far as the elevator side versus the processor side, though, the rail values have not changed a lot, and rail logistics are certainly becoming a concern that we'll start to see this basis turn back south again once we do get back in harvest activity.
Thanks so much, Tara.
Thank you.
Tara DeNice is with the Andersons Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana. Joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media in Urbana-Champaign.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated joins us to take up the soggy weather forecast, at least in the eastern part of the Corn Belt, although I think skies are clearing in the western part. Can you tell me about it, please?
Absolutely. It's a light at the end of the tunnel here. It's been a long few weeks of wet weather for many areas in the Midwest, especially Missouri into Indiana. And at this hour, we are seeing improving conditions across the western portions of the region. In fact, Iowa is mostly sunny throughout the morning, and the extreme eastern part of the state's clearing out now. The same thing's true for western portions of Illinois. And as we move through the next several hours, we'll slowly move the clouds further to the east, and we'll see more clearing take place. But it will be wet this afternoon in the eastern portions of the Midwest. Many areas in Michigan, Ohio, parts of Indiana, even eastern Illinois will continue to deal with some showers for a while. It won't be until tonight that we start seeing a more significant improving trend. And for Ohio and parts of Michigan, they may still be getting showers at dawn tomorrow morning, and it may take them most of the morning to finally get the clouds out of the area. The good news is conditions will be a lot better after we get rid of this storm system with a good week to 10 days of limited rainfall and much better drying conditions across the region.
Can you tell me about total precipitation in the primary growing regions of the Corn Belt? 2 weeks ago, pretty heavy. Last week, some but not a lot of rain, and then this week, a little bit of rain. I'm trying to get an idea how quickly folks will be able to get back into the field.
Boy, if we go back just 7 days and look at the 7-day amounts, the greatest rains have actually been in Missouri. Portions of southern Indiana and Kentucky, those areas have seen anywhere from 2 to around 4 inches of rain just in that 7-day period. Central Illinois, not quite so bad off. Northern Indiana and parts of Michigan, northern Ohio, those areas are all seeing relatively light amounts. But if we go out for the second week of the forecast or the past weather, I guess, the rain totals suddenly get much greater, with totals running anywhere from 3 to 6 inches. Some areas in Missouri and portions of the southeastern Illinois, southwest Indiana border area have seen more than 6 inches of rainfall over the past 2 weeks. So a very, very wet and soggy situation from extreme eastern Kansas through most of Missouri into west central and some interior southern sections of Illinois, and then we'll call it the southwest corner of Indiana, where it's been so wet. But even areas to the north have still seen 2 to 3.5 to 4 inches of rainfall over the 2-week period.
And finally, go from North America to South American conditions there for the beginning of the growing season, especially in Mato Grosso.
Yeah, Mato Grosso is having a very tough time right now, along with Goiás and some of the neighboring states to the south. It's hot, it's dry, with no precipitation and no moisture in the ground. We've already seen or heard about some crops withering that emerged a week or two ago, and they're going to have to be replanted. And there's yet another
programs on WILL
in the second weekend of the two-week outlook.
That's Drew Lerner, and I'm Todd Gleason.